This episode of AetherStream is brought to you by Aetherflow Media. We would not be able to create content like this without the support of our amazing patrons.
Welcome back to AetherStream, everyone. My name is Anki, and I am joined once again by my amazing co-host, the wrangler of the podcast, keeper of corgis, and master of audio, Tilp.
Hello, that was different.
I'm also joined by my girl Dylan, who just celebrated her birthday last week, so happy belated birthday to you, lovely.
Merry birthdays!
And last but not least, the lawmonger himself, from which no tidbit is safe, Croatoan.
Hello.
Now, we are gathered here today to bring our coverage of the Shadowbringers MSQ to a close, and to start us off on this last leg of our epic journey, I want to ask you guys what you thought of the final locale as we literally belly flop into it, the Tempest. So give me that tea. Give me the tea on how you felt when you arrived and that opening cutscene.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm still hung up on Bismarck.
So just because of the way that you announced everything and kind of threw us right into it, the first thing that came to my mind, and this isn't even how I thought when it happened, is the old Spice commercial with that one guy that's like, look at you, man. Now back to me.
Yes.
Swan dive into the night of your life under the sea.
I love that. That's an accurate comparison. It's like, look at the rest of the expansion. Now back to me. I'm the Tempest.
I would like to take a moment to commend Soken on creating a very accurate underwater theme song. There's always some sort of way you know that you're in the ocean level of a JRPG. For some reason, every ocean theme sounds very similar. Soken did a very good job hitting that. Because I was like, yep, I'm under the water. That sounds like under the water theme.
Yeah, it's that watery ambience.
Yo. Wait, there's music down there?
Yeah, it's subdued and a little bit quiet, but it's there.
It's very, very subtle.
What?
I mean, it is the deep ocean, to be fair. So, like, there's no light and stuff down there. Everything's bound to be a little bit quiet. So I think he really hit that on the nose, like making it quiet and subdued.
I like the quiet music. If I'm not paying attention too much, that song will hit me and get me very sleepy. So,
right.
Sometimes I'll just be riding around in Tempest, and before I know it, I'm dozing off, and I'm like, ugh. That music again.
So I just popped down in there, and it's like a soothing tunes of string.
Yep.
With a grumpy corgi in the corner.
Ayn is just not impressed. Like that's the official tea. Ayn is not impressed by the theme song.
No. Yep.
Sorry, Soken.
So I can blatantly tell you, I have no idea what happened from when we walked all the way up to talking to Gregorit's first encounter or first reflection. I'm pretty sure I said his name wrong too. So I'm lost. Can you take again?
Oh, Croa? My Lord. Yeah. Croa. Well, like take us on the walk.
Yeah. They definitely were going straight into action. They were worried about your transformation to the city news, so there was no moment for a pause. They basically said, all right, time to look for Emmett Silk. Look for something that looks like Emmett Silk would be hiding in. And you're just like on the bottom of the ocean. You have absolutely no idea, you know, what he would be in or where he'd be hiding. I guess you're looking for a cave? I don't know. They said solid formations of rock that would look like a place he would hide in. And so you're basically just walking around looking for things that are subtly gives off clues of being a stronghold of sorts. And that's when you run into the Ondo, because you actually speak to one of the Ondo there, and then it freaks out and runs away, and you have to chase it.
Oh, shit, there are people here.
Yeah, and that's when you walk into the really strangely set up area that is like, it's like an enclave, like deep into the ocean, but it's surrounded by what looks like buildings underwater. And you know this place was under the ocean at one point until Bismarck created a giant bubble. So you're kind of trying to ask yourself, why are there buildings underwater? And you get to bring that question up to the Ondo. So for reference, the Ondo are the first reflection of the Sahagin species. A lot less violent this time around, thankfully.
Yeah, pretty peaceful.
Yeah, very peaceful. And so you get to talk to them. It's really interesting. So if you when you go to talk to them, they're not really sure what to take of your presence there, because not only are they're still trying to cope with the fact that they just lost all water in like half a second. They're breathing oxygen for the first time in, you know, a very long time underwater. So they're like, okay, who took away the ocean? And then you guys walk into the town and they're like, are you guys the emissaries? And then it's your turn to be, confused, because you have no idea what they're talking about. You know, they don't want to talk to you because they don't know why you're there. They're still trying to figure out why there's no water.
Well, and also they're really worried about their queen, because the queen is getting ready to hatch eggs.
Yeah, she's getting ready to have damn babies.
That was a side quest you get to work with. It was a really cool side quest.
I did remember that side quest, at least.
The clutch mother.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like really definitely like very concerning to them, because that's their entire future. If those eggs don't hatch, then they're pretty much done for.
Yeah. They're maintaining their silence until they can gain further information about you. So in the meantime, discussing as a group, Alfano brings up the idea of helping them, because he remembers back way, way back in the beginning of the MSQ, the original plan to get into Yulmore was helping Nyando. And that's usually how you get into good relations with them. So he's like, hey, let's try that this time. Let's see if that works and helps us get more information. Thangard's like, I smell chores. Fetch quest time. And you'll get ready to go help out and see what you can do. So everyone splits up, start talking to everybody. And you get to go beat up some crabs as a fetch quest. The crabs that actually, nice little nod in from Final Fantasy XI, I believe. Those crabs are the same design from those.
Yeah, the Ondo's just like, these guys keep pinching me and I can't swim away fast enough because you took away all the water.
The water's gone. And now they're stronger than us.
Yep.
Crabs now have the upper hand.
I hate those crabs, especially, I don't think they have it in 11 or 14, but in 11 there was a notorious monster called Cancer, and it was a very horrible crab that would kill people.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember Cancer. North of...
A world fate in 14. Eastern Lanasi's coast. He's a giant crab, so...
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Fortunately, like, the fetch quests aren't too bad for this stage, and you...
No, it's just one, thankfully. Just one. Kill the crabs, bring proof of your crabby victories, and then you get to ask the question. So you basically ask about the home. You want to learn more about the Ondo so you know how to approach them. And they explain this really interesting concept. So the flood destroyed their actual home, and they swam and they swam, and they were trying to find a new place to stay when they found these buildings underwater. And the thing is, the construction of these buildings were so well put together that they found shelter in it, and they... basically felt that this was a sign that the creators of these buildings were protecting them. So they start to revere these creators as the ancients, and, you know, bring to them, you know, offerings, and they respect them. So they feel that they were chosen as kind of stewards of this construct, the buildings that they're living in right now. And so they believe that they're to stay there until the emissaries of the ancients are supposed to come. And they believe that's who you are. You have to be able to kind of, you know, prove to them that you are these emissaries of the ancients, that you have been sent. Now, you know, ancients mysteriously and very eerily sounding close to the concept of the Asians. So,
yep.
You know, there's some connection between the two. You know, yep. Yastola even makes the same connection. I found it really interesting how they tied it all in, really. The concept of the Ondo worshiping the Asians as their saviors because they found this ancient city underwater that protected them.
Yeah, like the whole divine providence thing.
Mm-hmm. Gave them more of like positive idea rather than a negative one that we're so familiar with.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, some of the structures down there are definitely different than what you would expect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for one, they actually look nice.
Yeah, like, first thing I was thinking was like, oh, we found Atlantis. Wait,
oh yeah, definitely Atlantis vibes. Atlantis vibes, very strong with that area.
Yep.
And so, you know, you go up to Yastola and she has the same exact suspicions. She's like, hey, I want you to do something with me. And she asks you to go kind of study these structures with her so you can, like, check out the buildings. You take a knife to the buildings. The knife can't break any of the stone. Stone's harder than a knife, which is really cool. You are able to kind of like, you're guessing that has something to do with Emmett Selk's story back in the time when you were in the Katana Ravel when he was talking about the ancients and their home before everything was destroyed. Mm-hmm. So you're making that you have that suspicion behind it. And then Yashola explains that she was able to get a copy of the mural in the Katana Ravel as a drawing, and she hands that to you and she's like, hey, all right, this is the final litmus test. Go over there and see if you can find something that looks just like. And I kid you not, I love how they did this. You actually find the building that's in the drawing underwater right in front of you.
It's exactly the same thing.
And you're just like, wait a second. Like, this is not, you know, this isn't a coincidence anymore.
This is weird.
Yep. So you end up learning, you know, as far as you understand, that these buildings, this constructs, all the constructs underwater are exactly to par with Emmett Selk's story of the city of the ancients back in the day. So, you know, they're talking about the lanterns, a land illuminated. You have to figure out what those are talking about, because it's connected to the fact that you're literally in the city of the Asians at the moment, or the ruins of the city of the Asians.
You gotta like the lanterns. That quest is fun. I really like that quest. It's a little bit extra, but it's okay, I guess.
And then, of course, you get a chance to visit, you know, you talk to the Ondo that was helping you, and he was explaining that they have a ritual that they're trying to do, where they're trying to return the light to the area, to the walls of the Forgotten. They had commissioned a lantern from a smith that was living underwater, and the smith was supposed to create a lantern to help them complete the offering ritual. And so they ask you to go visit the smith.
Yeah, because he's late or something. They're just like, we haven't heard from him in a while. Maybe he's dead. Could you go check on him, please?
Can you check on him? And guess who the smith is? Not someone that we've been meeting several times throughout the entire series of this game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Geralt's, like, reflection on this particular shot, except he doesn't seem drunk. Definitely. He just seems like a struggling artist.
And he has the long, flowing hair.
Oh, God, yeah. Yep. The majestic hair.
The hair killed me. I was like, I can't believe they did that.
He's also not in debt to Rowena either.
And of course, you find this Granolt, which doesn't sound at all like Geralt.
Sounds like granola. Yep.
And you talk to him and he's like, he thinks you're a ghost. Because he's like, oh, wow, someone's actually talking to me. It's not like I'm underwater by myself or anything like that.
Slowly going mad by myself.
Mm-hmm. And then he introduces himself, says that I'm the best smith, and I've lost my drive because I came down here to study these buildings underwater, and I wanted to create something similar. And once I got to work, the drive just left me, and I've been sitting here waiting for the chance to get that drive again. And so it kind of segues. So after this, you have to go find him inspiration, and the inspiration comes in the form of the remnant crystals of light from the previous Warriors of Light of the First. You get those from doing your role quest. Quick segue from that. You first see these crystals of light way back in 3.4.
Yeah, during the Warriors of Darkness line.
They use that to jump to the Aetherial Sea, and you use yours to jump to the Aetherial Sea so you can call upon Hydaelyn. And then those same crystals were brought back into the First when they sacrificed themselves to stay the Flood. And you actually recover these crystals of light when you complete your role quest and you fight the sin you're associated with each of these Warriors of Light. It's really, really cool. Really, really nice tie-in connected story. Probably going to have a separate episode for these quests because I don't want to get into all
Definitely.
Of them.
There's too much to go through right
now.
A lot
of stuff. So you get your crystal and you come back and you show him the crystal and he's like, wow, this is a story of someone who suffered. And this is it's a tragedy. They fought so hard for everything and yet they still lost everything in the end. And then he just starts getting inspired by, seeing the stories in the crystal. And he's like, this is it. This is what I need. Grabs the crystal and he starts crafting and he makes that lantern in, out of that inspiration. He then tells you, well, I'm still kind of inspired. So if you have any need for armor or weapons, you can just let me know. That's how he makes the artifact gear for your job.
Yeah, that's where you get your UAF.
Yep.
Which AF are we on now? Well, your basic level AF that you get at the end of like pretty much every MSQ.
But I love how they did it. I love how they incorporated it rather than congratulations, you finished MSQ. Your job test. Here's a box.
Yeah. Definitely did a good job bringing it into the story, tying it into the overall world rather than just kind of throwing it in your hands and like
making it a little bit cooler.
Kind of like the I don't know about you guys, but the A Realm Reborn one was like, hey, I need you to go over to this guy. cool, defeat these things. Here's a helmet. It's rare. Do not lose it. It's like, but you're handing me something rare. This doesn't make sense.
It is
and you
funny.
Have to do it twice.
They did take the time to create narratives for all the gear in the lore book. So if anyone has a chance to read those, really nice reads. They have like, they explain the artifact gears from each set. And then in the second lore book, they have lore for the set that you get in Stormblood. So it's pretty cool. But they actually tie this set into the MSQ, which is what they haven't done before. So it was really interesting to see. Kind of like that.
Yeah, it wasn't stock standard. So it was nice. It made it feel a little bit more special, like you were actually being bequeathed an heirloom of some kind or something that had some overall relevance to the world that you were living in, which I thought was nice. It was better than, like Dylan said, here's a box. Enjoy.
Yeah. Definitely more than just a box, that's for sure.
Yeah. We'll go over the armors later because I have a couple complaints about Dragoon.
Lots of stuff. The gear
special.
So we do continue on and we get the lantern lit and they're like, oh, cool. Look at this really extra and kind of extravagant
very,
lantern.
Very extravagant.
I was going to say, I have to say that I was kind of disappointed that we didn't get that as a housing item.
I know. It's definitely definitely something you could see.
So they do their little ritual and they're just like, oh, look, like all of the stuff's lit up and maybe like they kind of direct you. I think they direct you as to how to get in.
Yeah, they give you they basically that was their ritual test in a way. They wanted to see what you were about and seeing that you were able to retrieve such a thing for them. They see that as significant evidence that you are, in fact, the emissaries of the ancients. Before you even head in, there was an opportunity, you had a chance to talk to Ardbert about his erstwhile companions. It was a very touching moment. I kind of teared up there because he didn't even know half the stories that you end up finding out through the Echo and through the experiences of the role quest. You get to tell him what you saw. And he's like, I never knew that about said person and how, you know, what they went through before they joined me. And it's just like, oh man, it was really good. Really
more
good
touching moments with Ardbert.
Yes. Anytime he shows up, you know you're about to cry. So just get ready for it.
Pretty much.
Yep. And then you get a guide. They say, we shall take you to the illuminated land, and you know, which you were trying to figure out what they were talking about. And they said, they'll take you there because you've proven yourselves worthy. And there goes the semi-long travel deeper into the sea.
I want to point out that during that time, you can see it in the distance, but there is just that thick haze and fog.
They did such a good job keeping it hidden. Oh, man.
Yeah, so you can't quite tell what it is. You're just like, there is something over there, but I'm not exactly sure what that thing is.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting there. Like the city of the ancients from Seven, to be honest. I was thinking it was kind like, it's gonna be like big giant seashells and stuff. And then Sephiroth is going to leap out and just like punch us in the chest with the katana.
Oh, Lord,
he's gonna come from the sky, descending upon us with the rifle's blade of justice.
Oh, my Lord. But the descent downwards is cool as well because they've done a good job. I mean, I'm an ocean nut here, so they've done a really good job of imitating the deep ocean. So plant life gets more and more sparse. You see wrecks. You see creatures that are more bioluminescent than anything else.
Was it the worm tubes or whatever they have? Those really weird things in the deep ocean. They got those.
Oh, God, yeah.
They got like bones and stuff that are like pearlescent. Like, I mean, it's just had a very, very nice deep aesthetic going on.
Yeah, you've got the fossils of ancient leviathans. It's a very cool descent and it makes you feel like you are traveling downwards as opposed to we're just going. It doesn't feel like a linear progression. It feels like you're on an express elevator to the bottom of the ocean. And the final reveal is excellent. It really is.
You open that gate and you walk in and it just hits you all at once. The skyline, the music. The music changes, gets into that like lo-fi jazz, the ticking in the background, which was actually on purpose.
Yeah. So. Just when you thought you found your most favorite music in the expansion, it's like, oh,
man.
Really? I mean, I love it,
I mean, for 5 minutes, I was just like, why are we in New York?
yeah. No, I was thinking I actually did start humming like that one song by Alicia Keys, New York.
I wouldn't blame you. That was a real skyline there.
It is very, very grandiose. And the more you've learned about the Asians as, you know, like a race, you figure out, you know, they were pretty grand about things. They weren't, you know, they're ancient. They've built up this place over a long amount of time. And it, you know, it's befitting of something, a very ancient culture that had like had been established for a long time.
Yes.
I just remember being in awe because for the longest time, the Asians never really had a picture to paint other than we're just bad guys. You know, you hear their names, they're sneaking around, secret societies. You know, they didn't really have a basis in the world. And then when you make that connection that this is where they lived, you're like, whoa, they're people too. You know, they had lifestyles. And it just, it hits you like the further you go in. And it's definitely in the beginning when you realize this is their land that they're trying to get back. It was just, they did a really good job with it. And I know a lot of Asian apologists were very happy to see the city.
Yeah, because of course, and you meet the Amarotine NPCs who are convinced that you're a child for some reason. They're like, they kneel down.
Can I help you? And you're like, wait, why are you so nice to me?
One of them, I think, turns around to you and says, are you okay? Where are your parents?
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah. One of them asks for that.
One of them, like, you know, like shades your outfit. You've just gotten your AF gear and you're like, I'm looking fresh. I'm looking fabulous. And then this Amarotine like shades you like, what are you wearing? And I'm just like, do you want to fight?
Yeah, that's
funny. These are my new clothes. I look fabulous. How dare you say this to me? You're just old and outdated.
I got new kicks. Come at me, Boomer.
Right. Okay, Boomer.
The thing that gets me, though, is that out of everything was Yshtola's reaction, because she was able to see the city as well. You know, she is blind. You know,
yes.
Blind. She can't see anything. She only sees the ether that is around her, the ether of people. So
kind of the daredevil sense.
Yeah, when she walks in, she's seeing a city. And this is probably the most strong visual experience she's having in a long time. Since that incident. And she's just like, so wait, you're seeing the exact same thing I am? Like, this is a etheric construct out of scale I've never even thought was possible.
Yeah, it's basically just woven from ether. It's one mm-hmm. giant illusion that's kind of semi-solid.
Yep, on top of the ruins that were there. And it's just, oh man, it was so good. And, you know, you're talking to the Marotines and they explain to you, you know, what's going on. They talk about, they make that comment about the final days.
Yeah, it's their end times, essentially. It's on mm-hmm. a biblical scale as well. You get a real sense of the fact that these guys needed to pull something out of their butts to, you know, save their homeland.
Mm-hmm. Like, they are still talking about the ending or the end coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because I noticed some of them were talking about that, and it's like, oh, we're prepping this for the end, and
that's when
we're trying to fix it.
The council is doing this.
Mm-hmm. You learn all about it. You learn about the final days. You learn about the convocation of the 14. You know the culture, what they were fearing, and why they were preparing for it. And you know, you make that realization that they're stuck in that time right now. They're stuck in that last couple days prior before their own ending.
Yes, we get like more of an idea as far as who the Asians that we've encountered previously were as people. Like some of the comments about La Habrea, about how wise he is and stuff like that. And I'm like, that is not the La Habrea that I met. I don't know who you're talking about, but I remember the guy who I have to talk to every time I do the freaking MSQ roulette. And I just want him to shut up.
It's like, we met him. Are you sure we're talking about the same person?
Yeah.
Everyone that called Heidelin a parasite? You're saying he's right? Smart?
What? No.
Who are these people? We don't know her.
But then, as we kind of go on, we kind of find out, like, what he meant, though. It's about Heidelin being a parasite. Which was interesting and eye-opening. All of this kind of definitely built to make you empathize with the Asians more. And it really kind of, like, as far as IRL, it, like, really kind of made me pause and look around, because, like, the city does look so much like New York City. It looks like something that, you know, we have in our own world. And thinking about some of the things that we do outside of the game and as far as how we treat the environment, it's kind of like, ooh.
We yeah, don't it gives have you that additional perspective.
Yeah, we don't have the option of a Zodiark or a Heidelin.
Yep.
No.
I don't know if we would want one if it's going to end up like this.
Yeah, true, because this is like the worst, you know, custodial battle in history, in the history of anything, I think.
Yeah.
Man, the divorce is very strong on this one.
Oh my lord.
Sorry.
She not only divorced him, she eviscerated him and spread his pieces all over, like, what, the known universe?
Not just one, but 14.
Yeah, that's cold. That's cold, man.
But, yeah, but he was also sacrificing half the kids every so often, so. Yeah.
Right?
He needs some, like, of the powers.
This is a toxic marriage.
Are we sure Hades isn't Thanos? Mixed it up. My bad.
But of course, going through those quests, there's an obsession with paperwork. Like, there's a lot of paperwork stuff along the way, and you sit in queues, like, all the time, and that's fine. Like, I'm okay with doing that. Like, being British, like, I know how to queue. I was good with that. I vibe with that.
Insert DMV simulator.
Right. And you meet someone who's very, very interesting, who there are a lot of theories about that we can talk about in a lore cast, and it's Hithler Deus, who claims to have known Emmett. Like, oh, he's my best buddy. I really like him.
Probably why I'm
like,
self-aware.
I used to give him crap all the time.
That was the creepiest part, was that he was the only one that was self-aware that you were not from there.
Oh, and that he knew he was a shade. He knew he was a replication, that he wasn't actually himself. And
yeah, he knows what's going on.
Fake. But he explains it as, you know, it was just a simple distraction in the creation, in the process of creation of the entire area. Emmett must have said in his mind, Hithler Deus would know the truth, and he was created knowing what was going on. And
yeah, Emmett obviously has a close tie to this particular Amarotine.
I'm kind of wondering if that is technically us, in a way?
That's one of the theories.
One of the theories, yep.
I don't think so. Like, I have a completely different theory, but anyways.
But, you know, he tells us, and he makes mention, as, you know, we get our name called. You know, he says that he notices there's a second soul walking next to us. He says he can see the hints. He doesn't know there's anyone there. And then he makes that quip, you know, someone with the hue of your soul would not be easily mistaken. And then says, back in our time, your two souls were one. And you're just like, huh?
What?
Like, wait, what? You know
Excuse.
Me? Hold up. And then the whole goodbye, my new old friend. And you're like, well, no,
but what
you
does
to
it
stay
mean?
Right here and explain to me what you're going on about. Your mysterious nonsense. Like,
but we don't get any explanation. He just disappears. Nope. And you're just like, wow, thanks. Yep. Bye, I guess. Thanks for that. And then we're reunited, aren't we?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious if he's going to pop up in some of the further patches.
Yeah, like patch stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I think he might.
He's definitely important enough to come to.
He's named, unlike the other Amarotine. Like, he actually has a name.
Yeah.
If they ever use that area again.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Mm-hmm. In one way or another, they may. Mm-hmm. Like, that might be our ticket to get everyone back home.
I mean, maybe.
The talk of souls. Yeah.
Yeah. But, after all that, I know we kind of have to go in and we're like kind of requesting to see Emmett. Am I right?
Yeah, we've got the paperwork that says we're allowed to go in.
Go to the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
Papers, please.
And then you have, right before you do that, you know, you have that little pep talk session. You got to talk to each member of the Scions to kind of like affirm their commitment to your cause. You know, Reen is terrified. She's like, you're going to convert if you strain yourself anymore. And, you know, everyone's like, don't worry, he's got this. Because they've been with you since the beginning. You know, they've been with you since the Bloody Banquet. They've been with you since the Dragon Song War. They know you got it. She's the only new kid on the block.
She's the new baby,
So she's not quite worried for you. She thinks you're pushing yourself too hard. She doesn't know you're the warrior light. She doesn't understand that concept just yet. And it's really cool because you get to affirm everybody's commitment to your cause. They all each leave one by one. And then you go up to her and she's just like, I don't know how you do it. What keeps you going? And that nice little opportunity where you get to quote your buddy Harshafant.
Yeah, I sobbed. I sobbed.
I was
a
not
a smile better
for that.
Suits a hair. I was like, who is not going to pick this option?
I didn't. I'm sorry. God. I didn't like Harshafant. I'm sorry. I thought he was creepy.
Oh, no.
Okay, in the Japanese version, he definitely is. But, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The Japanese localization changed his characteristics pretty much.
Yes.
He just had, I'm sorry, like, mini rant. then I'll let you get back on topic. He just had stalker vibes all over him. And anytime he was like getting like skating out classroom, I'm like, dude, personal space over there. I'll be over here. Okay. And then when he died, I was like, damn it. I thought he was evil. Damn. Guess right. I was wrong.
Yeah.
What's that? He has love interest in me? Laters. As you walk away. Ooh, woo. Walk away.
But
Do you mind if I take this part right here?
Yeah.
Because this is like one of the most... Emmett pops out and he basically is asking you, are you ready to take this? To see the final days? When he said that, I'm like, wait, what is he talking about? And then the door opens and you see nothing but fire coming from this door. And you're just like...
Wait, what?
We're going Excuse to hell. Highway to hell.
That was Pretty my thought. Much. But when you walk through that door into the actual instance, you are in nothing but chaos. Like, buildings are crumbling around you as you're fighting a boss. Like, it is literally coming down. And it was just one of those, like, breathtaking moments where you see something so beautiful to the realization that it's coming down and there's nothing you can do to stop it. It is what happened and you
That's
are
it.
Now...
It happened.
Yeah, it happened and you're living it. And it's inside a building. You do the math. It's like a TARDIS.
Looks bigger. Looks smaller on the outside than it is on the inside.
Yes.
No, he was not happy that you were there and, you know, makes that challenge. You know, he's just like, you're supposed to be a monster. The rest of you aren't even, why are you even here? And they're trying to challenge him. And he's just like, you don't get it. You don't know what I've sacrificed. You don't know what I've lost. And you think that you're, what you're doing right now is any comparison to this. You're so far off the mark. It's unbelievable. And then that's why he brings you into Amarok. Cause he's like, all right, fine. You don't believe me? Let's go. I'll show you what I had to deal with. And like you said, that TARDIS experience that kind of shows that whole, it's like an example. He's like, this is what I had to deal with. Enjoy. And you're getting attacked by every nightmare in the book. I mean,
okay. So that first boss is just pure nightmare fuel, like a caterpillar with mouths all over it.
It, I don't know if anyone ever read, it's kind of a slide off topic. You ever read Darren Shan books, you know, Cirque du Freak?
I did not.
So real quick, there's a point in Cirque du Freak where you jump into the future, like when you're reading the books, and they have a monster described just like that. So when I saw that caterpillar thing, I immediately got pulled back to when I read that book, and I was not okay. I was like, oh, do that. Like,
well, and that's so, all based off of the Bible, the beast with thousand maws. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like they use that symbolism really strongly because they're, you know, those things were created from the fears of the Amaro times. You know, they heard that sound from the earth and it caused fear in their hearts, and the fear created those monsters and it just kept creating over and over again. It's like the Quiet Room, if anyone's ever seen that movie. But instead of sound, it was, you know, the fears in their hearts. And you have to fight all of them. And just, oh, no.
It's okay. The monsters will go away.
And then fight that last monster, which, I mean, was enormous. It was Therion. It literally was just called Beast. Like, that's they don't even have words for it anymore. It's just Beast. Like, they're terrified of everything that's being created. You're on top of the planet, and you're seeing the earth burn beneath you. I mean, the aesthetic, the view, all of that was fantastic. And if you know, it's been said, if you take a map of Eorzea or you take a map of the general region, they made those shapes accurate. So that's like, those are the original continents. Like, you see it, the actual world, you're on top of Hydaelyn, like the planet Hydaelyn, well, before it's called Hydaelyn, and you're seeing these things burn.
I was going to say, I will say I did notice that. And then at the same time as fighting the final boss the first time, it was just me and a paladin duoing that because everybody else died to the...
Yeah, everyone fell off.
It is one of my favorite bosses, to be honest.
Yeah. A lot of jump roping around, dodging those lasers.
Yeah. It was just seeing the world burn, but yet you're up there getting a bird's eye view of the whole planet engulfed in chaos. It's just, I don't know what to say on that.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it's the one thing you've been trying to avoid. You know, yeah. Your light. Your mission is to protect the world, and you're watching this very world that you have been commissioned to protect on fire. I mean, it's like, ugh, like the emotions you can imagine, just that fear and the horror, the reality of that horror just being right in front of you right there.
Yeah. And
sadly, you didn't pass his test because he says, you did a good job, but it wasn't the way I wanted you to do it. So, no, we're still not friends. And they get so irritated at him at this point. They start to fight him, and he's just knocking them out one by one, the Scions. And, you know, you see, I think Alice falls first. Alpha, no.
Yeah, Alize just went straight for that kill shot.
Yeah, she was done with him. So you can't, this is our story. You can't take our lives away. And Emmett's just sitting there like blocking it with his magical shield. So
he's kind of like, you're not even real. You don't get a story.
Yeah, you don't get it. Like he's convinced on his way. She's convinced on her way. It's just a clash of opinions right there. There's nothing you can do between those two. And they're fighting each other. And, you know, you have to, I don't know, it's just the way it all built up, right? Because all the Scions are falling. You stand up and you're trying to walk forward, but you're like, you've exerted everything at this point. The light's pouring out of your body and you're still trying to push forward. And Emmett thinks it's funny. He's just like, really? You're still going to do this? You're about to turn into a Sin Eater and it's going to be your fault because you're exerting yourself. And then he quotes the gremlin in the trailer, you know, weary wanderer. And, if you watch the trailer, the words he says are exact same. He's threatening you. He's taunting you. Yeah. Using the same gremlin quote. So that's why a lot of people call him Ratman. Cause
I was wondering the about gremlin. That.
Yeah. He quoted the gremlin, or at least there's a connection between the two characters there.
I don't think it's two characters. I think actually the trailer is like a metaphor for that scene. Caribou is essentially the light that's about ready to take you over.
About to take you over. Mm-hmm.
It's
really interesting how they use that as a story element, because never before has like the trailer been directly quoted in MSQ. And, you know, you're still going. Everyone falls. You're by yourself and you collapse and you start to lose consciousness. And the coolest scene in Shadowbringers, when Ardbert stands above you and he's holding his axe out and he asks you a question. If you can take one more step, would you? And you get to choose, you know, you get to be snarky about it or, you know, committed. Yeah. And then you grab his axe and he says, we fight as one. And then the theme starts playing. The theme song of the expansion starts playing right there as he's standing above you. And it just fills you with this like
determination,
heroic moment. Yeah. I mean, you literally, that's probably one of the most hype moments I've ever seen in the game.
Until you become one. And then all of a sudden your warrior of light talks
The light blows up and the warrior light talks and says, this is our moment. And you're just it's so cool. Emmett reels back because the light is so bright and he can see in the distance an Amaratine shade. And he's like, no, that's just a trick of the light. So here comes again back. We're going back to when Hithlidaeus made that comment about us having one soul, about us being familiar to Hithlidaeus, to him. And so it makes that reference again, that we have some sort of connection to the Ascians at this point. We have some sort of connection to the ancient city, because there's a shade, an Amaratine shade, standing behind us in the same like battle stance. And you're like, oh my goodness, am I an Amaratine? Like, which at this point, that's why, if you've ever seen all the art, the Amaratine art on Twitter or any other social media, it's where everyone's getting it from, is that one pivotal scene where you tell Emmett off, and you know, you're still kind of outnumbered as far as like ethereal power is concerned. But then our good old buddy Crystal Exarch shows up. He's not alone. He casts a spell and he summons your companions from other shards to come fight for you. So that was the MSQ explanation for the party. When you queue with the party, they're supposed to represent other warriors of light from other shards. Which is really cool. Yeah, it's really cool tie-in. But so he summons that spell, so you get a full party, and then you enter into the Dying Gasp. So
okay, So my raid team forced me, because I was the one that was lagging behind everybody. Mm-hmm. They forced me to party up with them for that final fight. Mm. So I have video of all of them coming out of every single pillar of light.
It's so cool. It's so cool.
All like, they were trying so hard not to spoil it for me that it was, I am a slow person, but like just seeing that is like, this is glorious. And then we kick into that fight.
Yep. And you know, Hades, or well, Emmett Suk reveals his name as Hades, because Emmett Suk was a title. He says, my name is Hades. I am the one that carries the hopes or dreams of my brethren. And he casts that spell right before you jump into the duty. He reveals his true form, which is this monstrous sorcerer, and you guys go to town. And that is the final trial of the expansion. So what were your thoughts of that fight when he appears and then you start doing that fight? Like, what were you expecting?
The first form, which I thought was just going to be the final form, it wasn't as much of nightmare fuel as the first monster was, but just seeing that form with... It was just one of those, like, it can't get any worse than this.
Well, and it was funny because he shows that form, and it was really nice to those that have had the opportunity to kind of ponder about Ascian, like constitution and forms and things like that. We've known for a while that the forms the Ascians take aren't their actual forms, because they use bodies of the dead or living and possess them. So we've never actually had an idea of what an Ascian looks like. And so the first true, semi-true Ascian form we got a chance to see was Ascian Prime at the end of Heaven's Ward. And so I think it was Gamerscape had an interview where they talked to Koji Fox about it. And Koji Fox explained that was one of the true forms of the Ascians. So there are several forms that Ascians can take that aren't the ones we see. And so all of us were like, what do they look like? What do they look like? And then we got to see Hades and we're like, oh, okay, that's what they look like. Hold up. Like, and it was really nice to see yet another kind of shape, because there's a part way back in Realm Reborn where Elidibus is like, this is the form I have to take so you understand me, so you know what so I can communicate with you. Because if I showed you in my true form, you wouldn't be able to talk to me. This is the way I have to become in order for you to understand me. And it's really interesting. You know, Hades shows his true self, because at this point you can now understand him and you guys fight. And I mean, that was really good duty. I really enjoyed that trial. The effects going on, you know, you knock him out and then he comes back and he's like, I'm not done yet. And he's larger. He's hand sweeping back and forth. What did you guys think of the end of that fight, though? The end cutscene.
Emotional.
Oh man, yep.
It was like, very bittersweet and appropriate. Yeah. Like, it wasn't cut and dry as far as Emmett Suk or even the Warrior of Light. So
yeah, that pain voice hurt me. I'm not gonna lie. When he was like, what will we do about this anguish in my heart that yet burns after all the eons? And I'm like, I feel bad. I feel like I'm the villain. Yeah. I genuinely feel like the issue here. Because he's going on about how I'm not giving up, not these hopes, not these dreams, not yet. And he comes back, and then, you know, Thancred shows up with the Aura Sight. They cut it up, they seal him away, and then you get commanded to throw that blade of light. And I kind of didn't want to, because I felt really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because he was coming at me, I threw the blade of light, and that the scene that everyone remembers. When, you know, it comes back to the original, like, the darkness has faded away and you're standing on the top of the building. And Emmett Suk looks back at you with a hole in his chest, pulls back his cowl, and he looks at you with almost, I can't even say what, that face wasn't even sadness. It was just, it was a kind look. It was a very loving look. He looks at you and he says, remember us. Remember that we once lived. And then he fades away. Oh, my heart. I hurt so bad there. I was just like, what did I do? I feel bad. And then, you know, the music's playing. And, you know, like, I mean, definitely what got me was his face, because there was no anger there. He made his peace and he realized, you know, this is the way things have to be then. And he just wants you to not forget. And people have made really good responses to that scene. I don't know if you've seen some of the art on social media in regards to that scene, but Mercy, I can't take it.
Only art that I remember seeing is one, and it was kind of like a knockoff of Kingdom Hearts, but it had Emmett and a younger person just sitting on the side of one of the buildings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And like they did it as a comic, but like the scene before, it just showed him, and it was just one of those like, wow, this is really touching. I'm wondering what I'm missing.
There was one I saw, and this is obviously not canon, but there was an art I saw of an artist's Warrior of Light was in that scene, and Emmett says, "Remember me," and the Warrior of Light reached forward and took his mask, the red mask glyph, the magic that they usually summon, and then he puts that on his own face, and I was like, oh my chest, like I was like, I just felt so just mournful for the whole setting, and it's so good, but. They don't even stop there, because before you can even get over the fact you just killed what may be your best friend, because you don't know yet, Crystal the Exarch shows up with the rest of the, the rest of the Scions. The Scions are, they're congratulating you because you no longer are becoming a Sin Eater. They're like, for some reason, the light in your body is, it's good.
It's gone.
Yeah. Like, and they don't even know. They're like, it's not like it dissipated or anything. It's just, it's normal.
Yeah.
Which you realize Ardbert pulled your soul together. By joining his soul with yours, you had a chance to bring the light in, and you took, you basically did your job as a Warrior of Darkness.
Yep. On top of that, you also had that one interaction during the fight where you basically
pulled on the powers of light to combat the darkness, which was a really nice balance there. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And actually, that part at the end where you're talking about how phasing with Ardbert's soul kind of helped you balance out your light, it made me think of the one fight with Sophia with the Warrior Triad, as far as like, finding equilibrium. And that was kind of one of the things I had
in my head. Yeah, like ethereal equilibrium. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it seems it was like all about, is not necessarily being tipped too far to the darkness or to the light, but, having that balance.
Yep. Very, very, very important. Call back to that original theme that they brought up a lot during the Warren Triad quests. And this is the pivotal moment I think was the reason why Square Enix spent all that extra effort to tell you to do the Crystal Tower quests, because when the Crystal Exarch comes up to apologize to you, you have a chance to say, "'Tis good to see you awake, Grahatia." So that option isn't there. I played originally with a character that hadn't beat the Crystal Tower series, so I didn't have that option.
Oh. But
yeah, that option isn't there if you didn't do the Crystal Tower series. So, oh man, huge moment missed. But I replayed recently with a different character that had actually beat the Crystal Tower series, and I had that option. So when you say that, "'Tis good to see you awake," Grahatia looks at you and can't even help it, and just starts to cry, like genuinely cries, and is holding his face and wipes away his tears and looks back at you and says, "It is good to be awake." Like, the feelings, like you didn't even get over, you didn't get a chance to get over the fact you just punched your best friend. You're now dealing with the Grahatia, just, realizing that you remember him. Like, come on. Like, Square Enix, there's a level of angst, and you're just like, you're breaking all the limits.
Yep.
And then that was basically it in the fight. You get that nice, return home. Dulia Chai is scared for you. She thinks you passed away, and then you show up and she's happy. Best mom ever.
Big old fluff mom.
Yeah, everyone's cheering you on. There's the narrator's voice going over. All that sacrifices finally paid off. 100 years of all that suffering and pain and trials just for this chance, this one chance that you finally completed to bring back the night. Mm-hmm. You go back to the Crystarium. It has that pan, like the cutout
pan down. Yeah,
where it shows Ardbert returning to his friends, and then it goes back to you returning to your friends, and really, really good. The music was really good. The setting was really good. And then they end it with that kind of funny magical moment where this kid walks up to you and is like, "Are you the Warrior of Darkness?" And you just put your finger to your mouth and you're just like, "Shh.
Secret."
And that's how it ends. That's how Shadowbringers ends. And then just it plays the music again and you're like, "Oh my gosh." Like, I don't know. That was an intense moment for me, definitely, to go through all of those moments. How did you two feel about beating Shadowbringers when you got to that part?
I thought that New Game Plus couldn't come out fast enough.
So you can play it again.
It's like, that's, I want to play it again now. Oh, but at the same time, I've been living on 2 to 4 hours of sleep a night for the past week. I want to go to sleep now.
Yeah. When it came to the whole Ardbert walking down the final steps and, you know, it going from the crowd, it's like, oh, he's being praised. And then, you know, it pans right past him and it reveals his friends. It was just like, he's at peace, yet he's with me.
Yeah, it gave you his soul, so.
It was very heart-touching, a lot of cries, a lot of tears. Sorry for the one that was not emotional. they did really good. I really enjoyed this compared to Stormblood. Heaven's Sword was kind of a hit and miss with me when it came to it. I know we're going to go over that later, but hands down, this is my favorite expansion so far.
It is. Cleared so many numbers in everyone's books. It's so good.
They need to keep the same writing staff.
Ishikawa. Yes.
That's non-negotiable. Pay them whatever they want.
Wasn't Ishikawa the one that did
the Dark Knight quest? Yeah.
Yes.
Dark Knight quest and the Crystal Tower. She wrote the Crystal Tower series.
Oh!
Which is why Garhatu ended up... She has a lot more close ties to that plot line than the other writers do, so
that makes sense. Yeah, that works definitely. I think, and then a few minutes after I finished Shadowbringers, like, the theories just started erupting. Gosh, there was just so many of them.
Well, it was such a dump. There was so much context that was being thrown at us in the last three quests leading up to the finish.
Oh god, yeah.
You know, and not to mention that last quest alone, Shadowbringers alone, not only described, like, you know, you got to see the final days, you got to see why Zodiac was summoned, you got to find out Emmett Selk's real name, which happens to be Grecian, and so everyone was starting to wonder who else is named after the Greek gods. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you, like, how much information was in those quests.
Yeah, so the one thing that actually, at least for me, really blew my mind, even though I'm sure it was minor for a lot of other people. Like, one of the previous quests before you go to see Emmett Selk, where you're going to make your robe and you get like a creation matrix.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, so basically, this is a crystal. These are why we use crystals in crafting. This is so big. This is why, this is what it's all about. Oh my God.
Creation magic.
Yeah, well, and that also then kind of like, you know, down the rabbit hole, that's why then all of the primals or the icons need crystals, because that is like raw creation magic.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. That was kind of a big deal to me.
They discuss it in the MSQ. Yishtola asked Arianje about his opinions on it. And Arianje is like, yeah, it's not really different from primal summoning. And she's like, you're right. The only difference is that the Amaritines could create these things using their personal ether, and it was but a fraction of their own life energy to do so. As a fragment, as a shard, people of the source or people of the other worlds can't do that, so they have to use crystals in lieu of. They can't use their own life energies anymore. So that's why their creations are so different.
Yeah, I almost got like permanently muted by a couple of my friends on Discord because I'm like, so does this mean that when I make pants that I'm actually summoning a pants primal? There was like so much groaning. It's like, but it really, it's a pants primal.
it quacks like a duck. It looks like the, come on.
But it's a duck.
there is one thing we did miss at the very end. Like, as we're coming to the bridge and, you know, we're having our final moments telling the kid to stay quiet. Back on the source, the one thing you didn't expect to happen is happening. You have Gaius and you have Astinian inside. They're inside the barracks and, you know, they're sending search parties as everybody they've came to. Killed, one blow, nothing more. Mm-hmm. And then finally, after he sent his scouts to go, you hear it. And Gaius is freaking out because the Emperor just been stabbed and he heard it like down the hall, and they're rushing. And as you come into the scene, there's Xenos right there, sword in hand, in his body.
He's back. This,
he is left no mercy. Like something in him has changed badly. Like, I don't know how else to describe it, because like I wouldn't expect him to murder his own father.
Oh, and he explains his reason, even though it doesn't sound like a reason.
I know.
He's like, hey, Dad, you got in the way of my hunt. Not happy about it. Bye. What? Wait, what? And he, even his dad is like, you would literally just kill me for that? Like, you're not trying to take the throne? You're not trying to secede me? No, you were in my way. And I wasn't happy, so bye.
You're in my way. You're about to dust my crops. Has my friend, who I must so dearly crush on.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that away from you, Dad.
Yeah, because he accused his father of pushing you into the first. And so he's just like, well, you're gone now.
Yeah.
It's just like, that was. Well, and it's just it the way it happens. Xenos's mind is that simple reason. But we now don't have an emperor of Garlemald. There's no leadership for Garlemald. The empire that has been threatening the game since a realm reborn no longer has a leader.
Pre-Realm Reborn too.
Yeah, like I mean, they no longer have a leader. This has been the biggest threat since the game started. So what's going to happen now to Garlemald? What's going to happen to Garlemald?
Yes, I'm curious.
Like down and just, so good. That was a really good tie-in.
Yeah, I will say it was kind of shocking that the Emperor had enough strength to break that sword, like pull it out of himself and then snap it. Like, I thought Xenos's weapons would have been stronger than that. But like, I don't know. I'm kind of questioning what is to come from Garlemald, because I know Xenos is basically a hunter now. He is there for the thrill of hunt, and we are the trophy.
And not only that, he threatened Elidibus and said, you know, give me your information. And Elidibus told him about Hydaelyn and Zodiark, and he's like, wow, I'm surprised that the creator gods of this world are primals too. Looks like I'm going to take them over and then use them to fight the Warrior of Light. And it's like, oh, please.
Yeah.
Please don't become the god of this world, please.
Yeah, that is going to be the scariest thing that we're going to ever cross, if we ever do.
If he ends up finding a way to take over Hydaelyn?
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, but with that, guys, it does bring us to the end of our MSQ 5.0 series.
We have beat Shadowbringers, the podcast.
I've got a couple more announcements to toss in here, as we are very short on time. One, we now actually have a spot that you guys can chat with us on our Aetherflow Media Discord. So if you're there, you go to Aetherflow Media Related, and we're at the very bottom there for the podcast under Aetherstream. So we are going to have some projects coming down the line that are going to involve you guys. So if you are listening, pop over there. We will more than likely be asking questions, or if not, asking for feedback. So please, please let us know what we're doing wrong, what we're doing right. If you enjoy it, we greatly like to hear the parts. And, you know, there was talks that we may do a favorites episode, not necessarily like favorite ideas, but favorite memories and jokes and stuff. So, but we'll see how that goes. We got to get permission from the uppers. But other than that, we're also going to start posting videos on, not videos, but like snippets of the podcast on both social medias. Main one's going to be on Aetherflow Medias, but we will be posting on our Twitter as well. But that's pretty much all I have for announcements. You guys got anything?
Happy birthday to me! Woo!
Merry birthmas!
Happy birthday.
Yay!
You'll get everybody to start saying Merry Birthmas now.
I hope so. I like that. That sounds really fun. Merry Birthmas. So
it's one thing that makes me smile every time I say it.
Nice.
But thank you guys for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. We are going to be jumping into 5.1 next week, so I have a lot of catching up to do because I haven't even started it.
I am so disappointed in you. I'm so disappointed.
But tune in next time as we decide to take down a light primal and turn it into our best friendship.
Aetherstream is part of Aetherflow Media, a community-based project with a focus on Final Fantasy XIV. Aside from this podcast, we produce web content and our magazine, Aetherflow. And if you like what you see and hear, consider joining our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/aetherflowmedia. All funds go towards providing you with the best possible content that we can create.